and then planning the meals and then being consistent with it. Isn't the time around doing this the biggest challenge for people?
I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges people face. I think when I speak with people and even myself, time is a huge factor, and it's really making time. I always say people make time for what they want to do, not always what they have to do. When you want to do something, you find a way.
This is Mindset Reinvented.
We're joined by Mandy Page. Mandy's remarkable journey from the fast-paced fashion industry through personal health struggles and to a dedicated health coach today, she offers valuable insights for anyone looking to make positive changes in their lives. Her story of overcoming challenges, including being a junk food junkie, which we all can relate to, and facing cancer and a diagnosis of cancer, to emerging as a wellness advocate is, to me, truly inspiring. So let's explore how you, our friends of the show, can reinvent your mindset for better health and happiness, guided by Mandy's experiences and expertise. Mandy, it is so great to have you here today. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It is so wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Looking forward to diving in here. Mandy, you successfully transitioned out of a career in fashion to become a health coach. So what was that? If you could think about that mindset shift for you that led you to that change, because that was a pretty big change.
Yes. So actually, there was a little change in between that. I went from the fashion industry to becoming an executive assistant and client services manager. So I was actually in the fashion industry for about a decade. And then I transitioned into an executive assistant position to get out of sales. And through that is where my journey of becoming a health coach sidelined, basically. Basically, the mindset was that it was time for a change. The fashion industry is very glamorous on the outside, but when you're living it, it's a little bit different. Long days, long nights, entertaining, eating poorly, bosses that don't pay commissions, a lot of different things. The city life, Manhattan, I lived in Manhattan. It was great when it was great, and it got tired, and so did I.
Do you think that you were able to make that change because of like you said, the exhaustion? You've had enough? And does that really require somebody to get to that point in life where they've had enough to make changes?
I definitely would say that. I think that sometimes you have to sit back and say, what is it that needs to change? When you get to a point where you say, I'm just not happy anymore, where this isn't working for me anymore, just having that kind of realization that things are not going the way that you really want to. And I also had a child and realized it was just not the lifestyle that I wanted to live having a baby at home. I didn't want to commute into the city because at that point I moved back to Jersey where my roots are. Not these roots.
Oh, that's great.
Those two actually. But I basically realized that it was time to make that change that was necessary in order to be a good mom. And that's kind of where I also recognized that my health wasn't so great. As people looked at me on the outside, I looked, you know, healthy and vibrant, but I was tired all the time. I was bloated all the time. I had high cholesterol. I just wasn't doing all the right things. My skin was always dry, and I didn't really understand the link between what I was putting in my body food wise and nutrition wise, to all of those things on the outside. And that's when I realized, like, okay, we need to make some changes here. What can I do?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for a lot of us, we live our lives with such purpose and we're focused on certain aspects of our lives. And sometimes we forget about the fuel that our bodies and our minds need to be able to function at a very high level. And it's easy to forget. And it does take some commitment. As you know, it does take some planning. If you're going to do this the right way, to plan your meals, what's the objective really first? And then planning the meals and then being consistent with it. Isn't the time around doing this the biggest challenge for people because everything else is moving a mile a minute?
I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges people face. I think when I speak with people and they, even myself included, time is a huge factor. And it's really making time. I always say people make time for what they want to do, not always what they have to do. So when you want to do something, you find a way. So it's really important to make the time to do all of the things that are good for us. And that does sometimes include taking the time to plan our meals. I'm a huge advocate for Sundays and planning and meal prep. I was not always that way. And again, that was, you know, a mindset thing and saying, you know what, I need to sit down with a calendar and think about what the week is going to look like, what's on the agenda, who's home, who's not, and write down what I'm going to buy. I didn't want to go to the grocery store and just aimlessly, you know, scan the aisles and just pick things up and do whatever. By planning, and many people do that, and that's normal. So it's okay. But that's where coaching comes in really handy, because somebody can kind of guide you through how to plan and schedule and time block, basically, and write it down. You know, dry erase board is a huge tool. I just got one for my daughter for school. Writing down what your schedule is, knowing when to do your homework, knowing when to do all of the things in your routine, cooking, planning, all comes into play, so that you're not driving through that fast food drive-through and picking up $3 chicken nuggets and, you know.
You mean the poison?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do know there were times in my life where I would spend my Sundays planning and preparing for bulk for the rest of the week. And I found it was a little bit of a chore to do it at the time, but the rewards were so great during the week when life starts getting busy and scheduling and everything. And I would always find myself, you know, in the best possible mental shape, physical shape when I used to do that. When I travel, it's hard. And this may be another question for you. Like right now, as we were talking about before the show started, I'm in Lisbon. And, you know, I was in London last week. I'm in Lisbon now. And what's interesting is that I can't meal prep. Maybe that's not the right word, can't.
It's harder.
It is hard. It is hard. You know, I'm ordering in. I'm at restaurants. So what would you say for people that are traveling? What can people do to eat well and to, you know, have that managed in a little bit better way?
Great question. So it also kind of falls into the planning category, because when you do know you're traveling, typically you know that you have an agenda or an itinerary. So, you know, for instance, if you're away for 2 weeks, you know, you're traveling from London to Lisbon, you are planning how to get from one place to another. You're taking a train, or you're, you know, somehow you're renting a car, whatever you might be doing, or you're flying. So you're planning those things. So at the same time, you might be also searching the restaurants that are in the area, the farmers markets that are in the area. It brings up a great point. I have so many friends that traveled this summer to Italy and to London and to so many different places. And they were all posting all of these pictures of their food and the restaurants that they went to. So you don't always have to say, oh, I'm going to go away and I'm going to gain 10 pounds. And, you know, it's this immediate negative thought of like, oh my God, I'm going away, I'm going to gain all this weight. No, you can go away and you can eat great. And actually, I think that people outside the US have much better food choices than we do.
Amen.
Right? I mean, this is a huge problem actually here in America. And I don't travel often, but I've studied, you know, the blue zones, and I always study, you know, people traveling in different places, and they have farmers markets everywhere and artisanal breads and bakeries that when I went to Italy, I remember I ate pizza and pasta every day, but it's different because it's not processed. And you know, you hear about the blue zones, if some of you who might be familiar with that, they make their own food and they source it and they're doing it together as a community. So when you're traveling, you can kind of try to plan some of the places that you go to, or look for the local places that might have those better selections, so that you don't feel like you just have to grab and go. So there are ways of, you know, just doing some bit of planning without it being stressful. And then I, of course, say if you do take any supplements or you have anything that you take that does help keep you on the healthy track, that's important to bring with you when you travel. Don't forget it, because you want to keep your immune system strong, because traveling also does, you know, tend to take a little toll on your immune system. But find those, you know, bakeries and farmers markets that have fresh juices and sourdough breads. That's all good for your gut.
And I am blessed in terms of where I am right now, because the food has been not only phenomenal, but just healthy. You feel like when you're eating it, you just feel really good that you're giving yourself medicine versus just nourishing yourself, you know.
I love that.
And that's another thing. That's a psychological benefit. Yeah. Yeah. And you describe yourself, and this is interesting to me, you describe yourself as a wellness GPS.
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit more about what this means and how it benefits those that you work with?
Of course. So many of us use Waze or Google Maps when we are going somewhere. We plug in the address of where we're going, and that helps take us to where we need to go. And if we take a wrong turn, it puts us right back onto the path of where we need to be. So I like to think of myself as your wellness GPS. I am going to help guide you wherever it is that you want to go, whatever that final destination is, which is hopefully just a really good life, feeling good within your body and feeling good within your mind, and helping you stay on track. And if you do veer off track or you make a wrong turn, you might have that slice of cake, or you might have a voice in your head that's telling you something negative. I'm here as your wellness GPS and your coach and your cheerleader to help just bring you right back. It's okay to, we all get off track once in a while, but eventually we get right back on it. So I like to say I'm your personal navigation.
Love that. Wellness. Love that. Yeah. And it really is interesting because I believe that we all can become our own wellness GPSs. And I think that some of us just need some guidance, some accountability to get themselves to become their own wellness GPS, which is why what you do in your work is so incredibly valuable.
Yes. That's what I ultimately want for people. I always say when you have a coach, it doesn't have to be forever. I say it when people go to therapy, you don't necessarily need to be in therapy for 10 or 20 years. If you want to, that's great too. No judgment. However, as a coach, having a short-term plan for long-term goals is ultimately what we try to do so that I get you on the right track or I guide you along the way. I'm not a dictator. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just holding your hand and coming alongside you to help meet you wherever you're at and help you take those small steps to achieve whatever it is that you want to, so that then we can provide the tools and work on tools that will keep you on track without me. Should you want me, you know, to work with me going forward, you know, at any point, of course I'd be here. But the goal is for you to be able to have the tools to do those things, just like I did. Because like I said, I was not healthy. I was not doing any of this stuff. My friends laugh at me because they know I was the girl who never ate fruits and vegetables, who was eating fried chicken, hot dogs. I was the one going to the fast food. Don't get me wrong. Chick-fil-A is still a little bit of a weakness, but I try to stay away. But, you know, going out in the city and partying and having a good time. And now I'm just like the person who's so excited to post my tower garden, growing my own greens in my kitchen and posting my healthy recipes and showing people how to take your favorite foods and make it healthier.
And I happen to love Chick-fil-A as well. I don't eat it often, but when I do, it's to me, it's just, they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, it's the best of the fast food.
And you know, this is not about depriving ourselves of, you know, the luxuries of life. I mean, we're here on this planet. You know, we got one shot at this. Of course, we want longevity. We want to be around for our loved ones and enjoy life as long as we can. But it doesn't mean, look, if you've got a craving for Chick-fil-A, maybe it's about making a better choice. So when you're driving in, instead of, you know, ordering the big deep fried spicy chicken sandwich on that big bun, maybe it's soup, a salad, and maybe four small nuggets.
Exactly. You know what you're talking about.
Just to satiate yourself and then get back on the path that, you know, is all about the great, more nourishing foods. You know, and I think just in general, I mean, we read the statistics that people all over the planet are struggling with healthy eating. And you being, as you've said, a former junk food junkie. I mean, obviously you probably weren't feeling very good after a while. Like maybe you had some blood pressure issues. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. What was it that you felt that made you transform things with food?
So interestingly, well, number one, I was always asked if I was pregnant, even when I wasn't. So I was, you know, always thin, but I always had that belly. And everybody my whole life and my parents, I love them, but they always said, oh, but it's so cute. But it really wasn't. Nobody realized that it was probably because I was eating too much bread or I was eating things that didn't work for my body. Really what happened was in 2015, I met somebody who introduced me to fruits and vegetables in a capsule. So it's basically powdered form of fruits and vegetables. And I thought that was genius. I hated how vitamins affected me. Vitamin C always gave me a stomach ache. And I said to myself, why not? You know, I don't eat fruits and vegetables enough. I ate cucumbers and strawberries, and that was about it. And I figured, I had a child baby at that time who also was hospitalized at 4 months old with RSV. And then she became asthmatic. So my daughter had a cold pretty much every month for her first 4 years, maybe even five, always on a nebulizer. So introducing the fruit and vegetable capsules, it's not a vitamin, it was food, but it looked like a vitamin because it was in capsule form. I didn't realize what that was doing, but that was really my catalyst to becoming the healthier me. Because what happened was, it's kind of like sugar. The more you eat, the more you crave. So the more sugar you have, the more you're going to want. If you drink wine, you have a glass, you usually might want a bottle. So same thing happens with good food. When you start putting good nutrition into your body starts to recognize it and crave it more. I didn't know any of this until I started doing it for myself. And it took a while because I wasn't consistent. So that's where consistency really comes in, and why consistency is key to anything that we do, especially any new habit that we're trying to initiate. Because to create a new habit, you really have to really make it, you have to do it every day. So those small steps led to big change. And here I am almost 10 years later, now a health coach, which is just, you know, again, it's funny because I just was so the opposite of any of it, but I want to age gracefully. I'm 46 years old. I want, you know, they say 50 is the new 40. I want my 50s to be the best yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when we get to our age, and I'm a little older than you, it's very important to do what we can to prevent the aging process from accelerating. We can't mm-hmm. stop it, but we can slow it down a little bit, I believe, through the things that we do in our actions.
Definitely. And it's not, you know, aging isn't just on the outside. We age in, you know, inside. So what we're doing, we have to remember, we only have one body. So what we are putting inside of it is so important to think about. So I always say to people, if you love yourself and you love your body, think about the choices that you're making as you're making them.
Yeah, for sure. And you hit something right on the head before when you talked a little bit about habits, because 30 days, maybe 30 days, it becomes a habit. And when your taste buds start to adapt to a brand new, you know, less salt and less saturated fats, you don't crave it anymore. That's one thing. And then the other part of it is that when you look at the commitment that you've put forth in meal planning and prepping, and then, you know, maybe you're at a restaurant and you say no to certain things, every micro decision that we make is leading up to a healthier lifestyle. So then when you have a choice in front of you, do I go, you know, fast food or something that's unhealthy versus something that's healthy, by default, you move towards the healthy side because you're like, I've done all this work. I've built up this muscle. I'm not going backwards. Would you agree?
1,000%. I'm not perfect. I have those moments. And, you know, we use that Chick-fil-A example. I'll go back to it. My daughter and her friends always want Chick-fil-A. And every time they get it, I'll get myself a salad. So it's from somewhere else, not from there, or I'll make a salad, but I'll always say, I just want one nugget. I want one nugget and one fry. Because for me, I've learned that you can satisfy a craving, or you can satisfy that, you know, that temptation instead of depriving yourself. I find that the people who say, okay, I need to go on a diet. They go on these crash courses. They want the quick fixes, and they might lose weight and, you know, 10 pounds in 10 days and do all of these things. But then what happens? It all comes back, and usually it comes back worse. So when you deprive yourself completely of what you love, it has a negative effect. So when you do it slow and steady, and you can find the happy medium of saying, okay, I'm going to just slowly crowd out the things that aren't as good for me and start introducing things that are better. Have that plate be full of, you know, the better stuff, the plants and the whole food and the nutrient-rich foods. And if you want a bite of cake after dinner, have a bite of cake. Don't eat the whole slice.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think people would be surprised, you know, having a taste of something like one fry or one nugget, it can really satisfy your urge. It's like, okay, hey, I did it. It's out of the way. Now I can move on. But I think, again, this is kind of mindset, whereas folks say, well, no, if I have a taste of one fry, I can't stop at one fry. Or if I have a taste of a nugget or anything, ice cream, a spoon or two, I need to keep moving. But you'd be surprised at how strong you really could be. But you have to, in my world, build up that habit so that becomes the default for you to go the other way, the healthy route versus not the healthy
Yes. route. And that's a very good point. It's building up to get to that point, because I do have people that I work with, or even friends or family in my life, that have that mentality, like, oh, but if I have one, I want the whole thing. Or, you know, the lady's expression is, I bet you can't just have one. And it is, it's willpower, number one, right? It's thinking, I think that comes into the whole mindset thing that we are talking about, where we could think, okay, how am I going to feel if I have one and I can kind of satisfy that craving? Or how am I going to feel if I eat the whole thing? And then you realize, wait, if I do that, I'm probably not going to feel, not only am I going to feel bad physically, but then you start with the whole mental thing, like, oh no, why did I do that? How many people go that route and they eat it all and then they say, oh God, I shouldn't have done that. You don't want to say I shouldn't have done that, right? So I always say, try not to look at food as cheating or, you know, a bad thing. Like, what can't I have? Why can't I have this? Or I only can have one. Try to look at it in a positive way of, you know what? That apple is so green and juicy, and I'm going to put some almond butter on it, and it's going to wake me up, and I'm going to feel great after it. Because if I have those chips afterwards, I'm going to get into a slump, and I just had grease, and I'm just going to feel bloated and crappy and just not feel as great. So have the positive mindset for the better food.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's gold. That's gold right there. And I think that, you know, we're all just trying to navigate life in the best possible way. You know, there's a significant amount of struggles that people deal with, hardships in their lives. And I think that food sometimes becomes a source of comfort for a lot of us. And I know in your life, you faced some significant challenges, including a divorce and then with breast cancer. So you lived it and you've turned the corner and you now are not looking back. But what would you say to folks that are struggling right now with something significant in their lives and they're so engrossed in it? Because that's what we do sometimes when we're in a problem or something that's hurtful or something that, you know, it could be loss, it could be grief, it could be a loss of a job or a loved one. What would you say to someone that might be in that space right now and is finding food to be comfort for them? How do they break through that?
Well, that's another great, you know, great questions. So having been through it, I can speak from a place of authenticity. And I think rather than looking at food as comfort necessarily, when you're going through a moment of weakness, whether, like you said, whether it's a death or it's something, you know, maybe with your job, rather than going to food, maybe go for a walk. Maybe listen to your favorite song. How about writing something down that made you smile today? There is research that shows that practices of gratitude not only help us mentally, but help us physically. So it doesn't always have to be about food. It is, you know, mindset driven, doing things that can bring out positive feelings. So I would say to that person, let's sit down and let's talk about what makes you happy. This isn't about food right now. This is our primary area right now of emotional well-being. And there's so many other buckets that don't involve food. Food is secondary to that. So that would be where I would go. And that's where I would start. And then if they are going for the food, well, why does that, if somebody said to me, well, I just want that donut. Well, why does that donut, what does that donut signify for you? Is it just, does it look pretty? Because I can show you pretty. I would say, let's go get some strawberries and oranges and pineapple, thinking red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple.
You're making me very, very hungry. Right now. Yeah.
And I would say, let's make a rainbow plate. And I bet if you look at that rainbow and then you look at the donut, I think the rainbow is going to look a whole lot 100%. Prettier, and it's going to make you feel a whole lot better, not only physically, but mentally, because it's going to stimulate, you know, the cortisol and all of the good things in our brain and the antioxidants, and it's going to bring out all good things. So there's so many better benefits to that. So I think it's just, again, it's a mindset shift.
It is. And I believe that humans just intuitively want to perform better. They want to live longer. And I know that it's hardwired in us as being human beings, but life sometimes can take us in a different direction. And it's one thing to say, well, if we allow it to take us in that direction, but sometimes in the process of grief or struggle, it is what it is. But for those, and I'm a big believer of sitting in whatever emotions that you're feeling, understand what those are, letting those emotions run over you, but take an inventory of what it is that is keeping you feeling either stuck or feeling like you want to give up. And for those people that want to give up or feeling like they've given up, because maybe you've experienced that with your health challenges and the divorce and the things that you've gone through, making life transitions, a lot of that stuff, you know, we as humans start questioning ourselves. Can we do this or should we do that? What would you say to someone that is in that mindset of, you know what, I've just given up? What courage do they need in order to reach out and get some help?
So when I was growing up, my mother always had an expression, and it was, it can always be worse. And I've carried that with me my whole life. So anytime, no matter what it is, no matter how bad it is, I always have that in my head. It can always be worse. And I always think that if I can use that as my guide, it will carry me through. I can't say that I ever really felt like giving up, no matter how bad anything has been, because I just don't think I allow it in my vocabulary. And I think also as a parent, I've obviously had the kids say, I give up. And I say, no, we don't say that. So again, it's a mentality thing. It's a mindset thing. It's sitting down and saying, what benefits will I get from giving up? What benefits will I get if I keep going? Asking yourself the questions of, how can I lessen this pain? What will make me smile? What will make me feel better? What will make me happy today? Even if it's just in the moment. And it's okay to struggle, and it's okay to have the emotions. I believe in that as well. I think sometimes you need a good cry. I've curled up in a corner and just fallen to the ground and cried. And then I say, okay, time to get back up. Because right? I mean, it's healing. You heal, but then I get up, because what's going to be accomplished by just sitting in that hole and, you know, and staying there? I have to keep going. You know, I want to keep going. I shouldn't say have to. I get to. I think if people start reframing the words instead of I have to, or I don't want to, or this is awful, maybe bringing it into I get to have another day. I get to wake up. I get to walk. I get to move. So reframing is really important. And then thinking about how to honor your emotions. And if it is a good cry, cry. If it's a book on self-help and how to get through this grief, read that book on grief. I always have lists of books to share with people to try to help them through different situations. And I'm always doing it for myself. So everything that I try to help people with are things that I practice too, because I always feel that we can always better ourselves, educate ourselves.
100%. Oh, it's spot on. And that, you know, when you, the words that we think about or tell ourselves are so incredibly important. And I know people know this, they know it intuitively, but it could be one word that we keep repeating to ourselves, that one little word, but yet if we adjusted that word to something else, then our whole perspective changes. And I'm a big believer of just stopping for a moment and really looking at what are the messages that we're telling ourselves. And the only way that we can do that is by journaling them. And maybe it's, you know, putting a line on a normal sheet of paper, and on the left-hand side, you know, the message that we're saying, let's write it out. And if it's negative, put a negative column, and then we put a positive column. And I'm curious to see in a given day how many messages I've written that are negative and how many are positive. Very few people do that.
There's a gratitude journal. And I can't think of the name right now, but I actually had bought it for my daughter at one time, and it does actually have prompts. And it says, like, what's something that didn't go well for me today? And what is something that did go well for me today? Mm. And I sometimes say, maybe there's more that didn't go well, and there might be other days of things that did go well. It's okay to list more than one, even if there's only one column. But it, to your point, sorry to interrupt you, but no. It's a great idea, because you can kind of say, okay, and then going back to the negative and finding a way to spin it or reframe it into something positive. So if this didn't work, take the lesson or take the value that that brings. Because when things don't go the way we want them to, finding a way to say, but this happened for a reason, and now something good has to come out of it, or finding something good to come out of it.
I'm thrilled that you said that, because it's spot on. Yeah. And yeah, so thank you for sharing that. The other thing I want to ask you about, and I know we're getting close to our time together. Now, you'd mentioned the concept, you talk about the concept of bio-individuality. Mm-hmm. Can you share with us what that means, and then how the understanding of that can help someone improve their health?
Yes. So the bottom line is, everybody's different. We're all unique individuals. So what works for some might not work for others. So that goes in every area of life, whether it's, you know, our food choices. Somebody, maybe if you tell me I'm bloated and I have this issue or that issue, I might suggest, you know, cutting out gluten or cutting out sugar, whatever, you know, the choice might be. I'm not a doctor, so I don't give that advice, but I can make suggestions or ideas. But what works for you might not work for me. And what works for me, I have to remember, isn't what is going to be for everybody else. So really just getting to know people. And I think that's what the thing about coaching is so wonderful and unique, is when you go to your doctors, it's typically a quick 10-15 minute appointment. If that, they're rushing you through, you're in and out, they do what they have to do, and you're gone. So I really think that every doctor's office should have a health coach on staff, just like they have nurses, because really you spend most of your time with the nurses. They're the ones taking your blood pressure, taking your blood, doing all the things that they need to do. And then you're with the doctor for a few minutes. So with a health coach, being able to really get to know somebody and really get to the core and be able to, like I said earlier, come alongside them and just guide them to their individual needs and help them however they need to be helped and work through their challenges, their obstacles, their goals.
Yeah. You know, I've lived my life believing and working with coaches in various aspects of it, because I don't know what I don't know. And I also need that guidance that people can provide, especially if they're skilled at a certain discipline that's important to me in my own life. And I find that a good number of people have never ventured off to invest in themselves in that way, to work with a coach to help them get to the next level in their lives. And I've worked with thousands of people who are looking for coaching. And so I understand the folks that take the time and have the courage to look for coaching, but there's a great number of people that automatically discount the fact that, you know, I'm not going to pay for a coach. Mm-hmm. What would you say to somebody that is, you know, maybe had some in and outs over the years about maybe hiring a coach or somebody that can actually help them, but they just haven't done it?
Well, I would say, number one, that our health is an investment, not an expense. And preventative care now will hopefully keep us from having to worry about sick care in the future. So I think those are two really important things to think about. Just like if I wanted to go and improve my tennis game, I'm going to hire a coach. I'm not an expert in that field, so I need to go to the expert. That tennis coach is going to help me improve my game, whether I go to him for 2 weeks, which I don't think would help, or 3 months. I bet you in 3 to 4 months, I'm going to see a major difference in my tennis game. So a coach, same thing, whether it's a life coach, a health coach, a mindset coach, you know, everybody does different things. I try to work it all again towards the individual. And we don't just talk about food. We talk about those, the emotional and the spiritual and the physical and your home environment and your work environment and your relationships. There's so much. It's the circle of life. So I think just remembering again that we only have one body and we need to take care of it, and we get to take care of it, and we only have one life to live. Let's live it to the fullest and treasure it.
Amen. Amen. Mandy, you're as authentic as they get, and your stories are inspirational. And I want to thank you for, you know, visiting us today and sharing your insights on our podcast. And I'd love to invite you back to another show where we can do a deeper dive on certain aspects of health. If you're open to that, we'll put you back on the calendar. But before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners where they can find you and learn more about your work?
Yes, thank you. So my website is Mandy, M-A-N-D-I-P, like Paige, wellness.com. On Instagram, it's at Mand, M-A-N-D, another D, 5-6. So it's at Mand D, like Mand D, 5-6. And on Instagram, I love to post recipes and tips and tools and all that good stuff. So those would be the main places. And then you can always email me at mandypwellness@gmail.com. I offer a 15-minute intro call for your listeners. I'd be happy to even extend that to a 30 to 45-minute complimentary call to assess what it is that I can do for you and how I can help you and come alongside you. I also offer some virtual cooking workshops and other things like that as well, other than my one-to-one coaching.
Oh, I love that. And thank you. That was very generous of you to extend your time with the friends of the show. I think that's really amazing. And we're going to have all the links to your websites, your social media in the show notes, so that everybody can find you when they refer back to this. And so again, thank you, Mandy, for joining us. We really appreciate it. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in to Mindset Reinvented. If you found value here today, and I would imagine you did, because I'm always inspired by what I hear on the show, that if you found some value as I have, please pay it forward. Share our show with others who may benefit by listening. And the key is that none of us ever know what someone needs to hear right now. And you can be that bridge to the show and change somebody's life for the long haul. So if you're not on our email list, please visit us at mindsetreinvented.com so that you can be notified of our newest episodes and some behind the scenes content that we're getting ready to share. So until then, keep living your best life. And Mandy, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Anytime. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.
This is Mindset Reinvented.